Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Mitchell Trubisky was nice. He got nice. 23 of 31, 244 yards. He had three touchdowns in the air, 63 yards, and a touchdown on the ground. You just know dude is running around Hallis Hall, turning all the TVs back on, cranking up the volume, and waiting for his highlights to show up. Great. Got that out of the way. With that out of the way, what do you say we get down to some real business? How about them Cowboys? How about them Cowboys? I need to figure out how to sound like a dog. Woof! Because that was a dog performance last night. You talk about a laydown. And the incredible thing is, just like that Bills game on Thanksgiving, it did not start out that way. In both games, the Cowboys came out on the opening drive, and they look like a well-oiled machine. Not only was that opening drive good last night, it literally was great. That was arguably their best drive of the year. They covered 75 yards. They ate up nearly 9 minutes of clock. It was penalty free. And it finally was capped off by this.
Second and goal for Dallas, trying to get on the board here. Prescott working out of the gun. Hand it off. Elliott powers through the middle, and he's in. Touchdown. 2-yard run for Ezekiel Elliott. The Cowboys strike first.
Westwood won. And for all the talk about the Cowboys offense not being balanced and not featuring Ezekiel Elliott enough, that first drive was literally perfection. After having 12 carries on Thanksgiving, he had 8 carries on that first drive alone. Not only that, but the defense showed up huge on their first possession. They forced a takeaway for the first time in 4 games on that opening drive. Now wait, that can't be real, right? That does not sound real. That defense especially. They could not have really entered last night's game on a streak of more than 250 snaps without a takeaway. But it is true, and they finally broke that streak last night. So they got off to an amazing start. And then it all fell apart. They took that 7-0 lead, and then they promptly gave up 24 unanswered points. 24 straight points, they get blown out. And don't let that final score fool you. It may have been 31-21, or 31-24, I should say, but that game was not close. You know it was not close. There were missed tackles. There were missed blocks. There were drop passes. There was horrible pass protection. There was a missed field goal. Every possible mistake that could be made was made, and many of them were made multiple times. I mean, the Cowboys were so bad on defense, they made Mitch Trubisky look good. It was one thing when he looked good against the Lions, but that's the Lions. Entirely another for the Cowboy defense to play so badly, they made it look like Chicago doesn't have a quarterback problem. They were so bad on defense that it made the Bears actually look smart for trading up and picking Mitch Trubisky ahead of Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. They were so horrible on defense, they made Chicago look like they really do have a franchise quarterback. Again, I cannot stress this enough. They made Mitch Trubisky look good. Not just good, historically good. According to CBS Sports HQ. Hey, by the way, do you use that? CBS Sports HQ? It is awesome. It's free. There's no login. There's no sign up. It's not free for a day. It's not free for a week. It's not free for a month. It is free. Completely free. And no special login. Anyway, according to CBS, I love it. I love it. According to CBS Sports HQ, last night, Trubisky became the first player in NFL history with 70% completion rate on at least 30 attempts, 3 touchdowns, more than 50 rushing yards, and a rushing TD. Nobody had ever done that before. Now, you can look at that as if Trubisky was the first guy ever to pull that off. I prefer to see it as the Cowboys were the first team ever deficient enough defensively to allow it. Let's face it. It wasn't like it was Aaron Rodgers who did that, or Brett Favre, woo! Or Steve Young, or Brett Favre, woo! Or even Brett Favre. Woo! No, it was Mitchell freaking Trubisky. Not exactly Brett Favre. The absolute worst thing that you can say about a football team is that they quit. So that's not something I bring up lightly. That's not something I just go with. But I'm going to ask the question, did the Cowboys quit last night? Because quitting is essentially the worst thing ever for an athlete or a team. But you know what's even worse than quitting? Them not quitting. Them trying and still getting hammered in a must-win game by a really mediocre team a week after getting humiliated at home on national TV. So quitting is horrible, but not quitting and showing up like that is even worse. So why don't I just give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they did quit? Because the only thing Dallas executed well were those shots on the sideline where players are staring off into the distance or yelling at each other in slow-mo, complete with spit flying. And there are those slow zooms in on that dull, expressionless face of Jason Garrett. And yes, I intentionally waited this long before I brought that guy's name up, because we're past the point of talking about whether or not Garrett should be fired. We are years past the point of talking about whether or not Garrett should be fired. He's going to be fired. If the Dallas Cowboys are a serious NFL team and Jerry Jones truly does care whether they win or lose, he will fire his dull, expressionless coach. Let's be real. Watching this guy on the sideline, seeing as to how no one is getting less out of more than Garrett is, it's fair to ask, exactly what the hell does the clapper actually do? What does he do aside from not getting fired? Does this guy ever say anything? Does he ever do anything? Does he ever say or do anything other than clap and look beleaguered? And then last night, he wasn't even clapping. So yes, he'll be fired, and he should be. And while his guys will say they love him and would never quit on him, man, they have got a really funny way of showing it, don't they? All of them. That once vaunted offensive line was getting beaten on basic pass rushes by three guys. Dak's targets were dropping really catchable balls. The defense was whiffing on one tackle after another. The way Dallas was tackling, you'd have thought that Chicago somehow had 11 Barry Sanders in Bears gear last night. What I'm saying is that was a hideous display in a game they absolutely had to have. So how do you explain that first drive and then the rest of the game? How do you explain that? What the hell happened? Zeke, help me out here. That's Ezekiel Elliott, and I quote, bleep. I mean, it's an incredible answer. Perfect, actually. Robert Quinn took a shot. He was asked about the defense. Quinn said, quote, "They've been having a struggling offense. We created two turnovers on defense. They still put up 31. You're just kind of puzzled sometimes. I don't think anyone saw this coming." End quote. Actually, my man, Q. Well, we saw it coming. We all saw it coming. That's the problem. There's no shock here. You listen to the announcers, the reporters saying things like, yeah, I don't know. Cowboys were just in shock on the sideline. There's no shock here. There's no surprise here. It was not surprising that they lost. It was not surprising the way they lost. Save this bull crap about how the Cowboys were in a state of utter shock on the sideline over what was happening. Because this always happens. This is who they are. This is who you've been. A sorry, underachieving team with as much or more talent than anybody, 1 through 53, but you're sub 500 overall. That is your normal. That's not shocking. You 53 are the only people in the world who don't know it. So no, that's not surprising at all. Nor is it surprising that Jason Garrett didn't get fired. It's pretty clear that Jerry and his son really do not want to fire their adopted redheaded son. But they will. They have no choice. Because that's a team, frankly, with no heart, mental toughness, or grit. A team with a glass jaw. A team that came out, landed a haymaker, and then when the Bears actually did counterpunch, they collapsed in a heap, spitting out their mouthpiece. The ref didn't even bother counting. He waved it off immediately the second the Cowboys hit the canvas because they got glossed.
He glossed me.
In any other situation, the head coach and the GM would be fired in the tunnel on the way back to the locker room after a game like that. But you knew that was never going to happen because the GM is the owner, and the owner and the GM love the head coach. So the only thing left was to hear what kind of bizarre word salad would come from Jarrah after that game.
All these guys are mentally okay for me. All these guys are talented enough for me. So that's good. I'm questioning how to put together a coordinated one that complements each other, how to put together a team that can win a football game. We're not collectively getting together as a team and doing the things it takes to win a ball game.
Man, my man sounds like he just got glossed. I'm not going to be real. And this is no exaggeration. I literally have no idea what he's talking about. Listening to Jerry Jones makes me feel like I got glossed.
He glossed me!
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Do not make a shake or eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And it goes wherever you go. To the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you don't see it, ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? He is Yogi Roth. It is the first week of December. Yogi, you are preparing for the Pac-12 championship. You know, I've got one question for you. Yogi, how great is ball?
I love coming out with you, man. It is so great. I'm overlooking Levi Stadium right now. The sun is shining in Northern California. It's hella fun, and I hope that the clouds stay far away, far, far away from this stadium tonight because we have an incredible matchup in the Pac-12 title game.
Extremely well said. It is hella fun. All right, so it's been a really busy week in the Pac-12. Why don't we start with some coaching news before we get to tonight's game? Yogi, what was your reaction when you heard the news that Chris Peterson was stepping down as Washington head coach?
Yeah, man, I was shocked. And it was pretty interesting because the day before that, I called the Civil War Oregon State, and I met with a mutual friend of Coach Peterson's and I's. And we were talking about him and saying, man, he didn't look like he had any fun this year. We should talk to him, you know, and we have that type of relationship. And he called me Monday. It was about 4 o'clock after the news broke. He said, hey, I wanted to just tell you a little bit about why I did what I did. And he talked about how he just lost some of the joy in the craft. And you think about that, and you know, I've watched guys do this before, and you see what the grind is, and then you see what the grind has become. And I don't think Coach Peterson wanted to continue down the road that they were on in terms of his path as a coach. And I think overall for the program, obviously it was a massive loss. Guy's a Hall of Fame coach, but I loved how gracious he was in his exit. And then the amount of coaches that have called him and even the coaches that have called me and said, well, he had the guts to do it, you know, and not just continue grinding along and be a lifer, but hey, I got a lot more to offer. And maybe he comes back and coaches, but maybe he goes and does something, you know, completely different. Who knows? But I do know that Chris Peterson, to me, is a true one percenter. I put him in the conversation with Pete Carroll, David Shaw, those types of guys that, you know, you just really admire in the profession. And it's sad to see him go because I'd love covering him and being around him. But to me, I'm really excited for him and the next stage of his life.
We're talking to Yogi Roth. Now, Yogi, I could keep following you up on that, but I want to get your thoughts on a few more things. You've got USC as well in the announcement that Clay Helton would be returning as head coach next season. That news was clearly greeted with a lot of anger from some Trojan fans. What was your reaction?
Yeah, so this is interesting. I want to state some facts first. You know, since 1980, outside of the Pete Carroll era, USC has only had 5 10-win seasons, which is crazy when you think about it, since 1980. And Clay Helton's been the head coach for 3 of them. 1, he was the interim, and 2, he was the head coach. So I think the standards at SC around what is reality isn't necessarily the same. And that's fine. That's pretty much college sports or sports in general. Everybody thinks their team should win, especially if you've got a storied past. So I say that on the heels of what Clay has done in his career. When he came to USC and was named head coach, it was clearly premature for the being named a head coach in the history of big-time jobs, right? It was not normal. So we were privy to watching a first-time head coach develop as a head coach for the first time. And then last year, after a 5-7 year, I believe we saw Clay Helton 2.0. And he reset himself as a head coach, obviously changed the philosophy, the structure of his staff, personnel, discipline within the program. Everything about it flipped, you know, and I think I'm as close to that program as anybody in the country, Jim. And what we've seen, to me, is a totally different culture among that team and within that program. And I think they're just getting going. So I think I'm in the minority of people on social media, but people like yourself or me that really cover the game, I think we would say, yeah, you had three quarterbacks that you play in a conference that is brutal with 9 conference games. Their non-conference schedule is as strong as anybody's. They've had multiple injuries on the defensive front. It's a totally different philosophy in the offense role. Yeah, they went 8-4. Like, I get the record without Sam Darnold, and people want to comp all those things all the time, but he also has played 2 true freshmen at quarterback in back-to-back seasons. I mean, that's just a reality of that they're going to have those struggles. So to answer your question, I was glad, and I am glad, that he's back as the head coach. And I think for those of us that watch the games and have watched the team really develop and aren't emotionally attached to the program, you could say, yeah, you should. Like, that's kind of common sense. They went 8-4. They're bringing back pretty much the majority of the team. They lose 3 or 4 players, and they're all solid players, but nobody other than Michael Pittman Jr. that is dramatically going to impact this team in terms of what they can't refuel with. So I like this team, and with the loss of Chris Peterson and with the loss of Justin Herbert, USC today, I think you have to pick them to win the Pac-12 South and maybe to win the whole conference next year.
Yogi Roth is my guest. I appreciate that response. I agree with that response, and I think the key part of that response is if you have a non-emotional response to it and you look at it, you tend to understand it a lot more. Now, if we get to the Pac-12 championship game, you've got number 5 Utah, number 13 Oregon tonight in Santa Clara where you are. You're always about the prep and the grind. I know you've gone back and rewatched all the film of both teams. Starting with Utah, what's your takeaway from watching that film?
They're awesome. You know, I had the pleasure of calling both of these teams spring games, let alone games throughout the season. So I saw from the spring the 2 best teams in this conference. And for Utah, it's a sad state of affairs that everyone hasn't been able to necessarily pay attention to this team. And they're going to get that opportunity tonight. And that's why I hope the weather holds out, because this is one of the best teams that the Pac-12 has ever had. And I put it up against some of the Pac-10 teams that were special. They remind me of the SC teams that I was on the staff of, because every player on this defense is going to the NFL. Bradley and I, Leckie Fotu, on their defensive front would start everywhere in the country, entered a kickoff to the league, and came back for their senior year. Francis Bernard, a linebacker, to me, if Evan Weaver didn't play in the Pac-12, he'd be the defensive player of the year. They have multiple guys in the secondary that are either lockdown cover guys or just ranging beasts at safety. That's Julian Blackman and Jalen Johnson specifically. I mean, they're dudes. They will, and I hope they get the opportunity to, but they'll be able to compete personnel-wise with Ohio State, with Clemson, with LSU, with Georgia, with any of these teams that are currently ranked ahead of them. And teams are going to be able to see that. I mean, they're not going to be overly complicated on the defensive side. The great defenses usually aren't, whether that was the SC ones, the Seahawks in the NFL, or Ohio State. If you want to look at college football right now. And then offensively, you know, as a Heisman voter, Tyler Huntley, to me, coming in the last weekend of the season, is a top 3 guy. He was completing 80% of his passes on 3rd down. Everybody thinks that he was a sleeper kid that came out of nowhere, Jim, but he was the player of the year in the state of Florida, where he was a 4-year starter at Hallandale High School.
Right. Like,
he wasn't a nobody. He just went to a school that isn't known for kicking out QBs every year. So I love them in all phases of the game. I think they're a team, if they win, they're a top 4 team to me, and I hope they get that opportunity.
Yogi Roth is my guest. I'm glad you said that, because if they win, they're a top 4 team in your mind, so they'd get that shot or should get that shot. So, Yogi, what's your reaction when you hear people say that Utah does not belong in the playoff, or the people don't want to see Utah in the playoff?
Well, I'll call that individual out personally. I mean, that was Paul Feinbaum. It's the last 2 weeks. To me, he's been an unfortunate embarrassment to the profession. You know, calling out Rob Mullins, and then saying that about Utah. And to me, for a guy who's been in the profession for 40 years, it's sad, you know, for young guys coming up. You know, I'm part of the next generation of broadcasters, and I looked up to guys like you. I've told you that, Jim, and somebody like him. And I think when you have a platform, or, you know, you play quarterback, you bear the burden of influence. right? And we have to respect that opportunity. And I think when people say that, that have a platform, they don't do that. It's okay to do that in your regional bias. That's fine. I mean, we all do that. I get it. You want to pander to your fan base. No problem. But when you're given a real platform that's national, like you have every day, Jim, you got to respect it. And to me, when you look at what Utah fan base done, they sold out over 50 straight games. When you look at the style in which they've identified, I'll blow your mind with this stat. When you look at 4- and 5-star players, Alabama has 69 on their current roster. Georgia has 40 on their current roster. LSU has 51 on their current roster. Utah has 8. So you want to talk about development? Like, to me, if somebody says that, clearly you do not do any homework. And that's fine. You know, that's what my job is to do, to hopefully educate a little bit, and your job and other people. But overall, if you have that take, your head's probably buried in a regional sandbox, which is fine. But if you're given a national platform, I think it's an unfortunate abuse of that opportunity.
He is Yogi Roth. He is a Pac-12 football analyst. He is a filmmaker. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He is the host of the Yogi Roth Show podcast. He gets his own custom intro for this program, and this is a big one. Championship week, Pac-12 title on the lines. Yogi, what a great job, man. Have a great weekend. Ball is great, and it's good to have you back on the show.
You got it, man. Have a great holiday, and we got to connect in person after the bowl game.
Contractors everywhere rely on Ferguson for a wide variety of specialty products, tools, supplies, and services. Access all of this and more with the new Ferguson app. It allows you to order on the go, find your nearest location, and quickly scan product barcodes for easy reordering. With tools like this, it is no wonder why ordering with Ferguson is the easiest part of your hard day's work. Download right now and get started. I'm talking about Steve Belichick and how personal appearance still is not show fodder. Do you really need me to explain that I don't give a damn that he looks like Walter White's best customer? Or that it's not all right to say that he comes off like somebody who sleeps in the dumpster outside of Gillette? None of that stuff matters. He's not Joe Dirt. He's freaking Steve Belichick, the offspring of NFL royalty. All I care about, all I'm really interested in, is what he does for a living, and not how much ice that you think that he packs into a meth pipe. With that being said, okay, I don't care what he looks like. With that being said, I do care how he sounds. And I've got some audio for you. Audio of him talking to the media. Never mind that it's a Bill Belichick assistant who's allowed to address the media. I mean, how weird is that? But he did speak with the media. And he is a coach. And he's the coach on a high-profile staff, on a high-profile team. And he is the son of the best coach ever. This week, the Pats have got an enormous game against the Chiefs. They need to win this game to keep the Bills off their backsides in the AFC East. And a quick side note, quick sidebar. Hey, Mafia, anybody want to get up in here and rep the 9-3 Bills? I've been asking for it every single day. I'm getting nothing. Anybody want to hype the playoff-bound team from Buffalo? 716 calls. Go to the front of the line today. Stop waiting. Get a vine. Jump through the damn table in the jungle right now. The Ravens are coming in. All right, back to Steve-O. I want to play this audio bite. This is him with the media talking about his memories of growing up around the game. Trust me when I tell you, it's not what the guy says, it's how he says it. Listen carefully.
Yeah, I got a couple memories of those.
And you want to share?
Any good?
Yeah, those are between me and him, yeah.
When did you first start watching film?
I've been watching it for a while. Like I said, football is my thing. I remember watching Primetime with Chris Berman back when I lived in Cleveland, and just watching highlights, learning, going into my dad's office, and Cleveland, spending time there, trying to watch film. Like I said, I don't think I knew what I was doing, but I was trying.
Any shot you can tell us who's calling plays on your defense?
I got it wrong.
And then that time, Dad got kind of amorous with my sister. Hey, remember this forever. Put this down. Mark this down. December 5th, 2019. The day human cloning was born. Yeah, I know. My listeners, you listeners were Gloss the Clones like 30 years ago. This is the real day that human cloning became a thing. That's not Hoodie's son. That is Hoodie's clone. Pretend for a second that I did not tell you the audio was from Steve. Listen to it again. Close your eyes. Picture the sunken, solemn face of his pops. Do this. Close your eyes. Concentrate intently and listen. And you tell me who you think this is.
Yeah, I got a couple memories of this.
And you want to share?
Good?
Yeah, those are between me and him. Yeah.
When did you first start watching film?
I've been watching it for a while. Like I said, football is my thing. I remember watching Primetime with Chris Berman back when I lived in Cleveland, and just watching highlights, learning, going into my dad's office in Cleveland, spending time there, trying to watch film. Like I said, I don't think I knew what I was doing, but I was trying.
Any shot you can tell us who's calling plays on your defense?
I got it wrong.
Yeah, it was amazing. I was a kid, and I was in Cleveland, and my dad was the coach, and we sucked, and then dad got fired, and then dad was pissed, and then we didn't know what was going to happen, and then we were on to New England, and we met Mr. Kraft, and then my dad was smart again, and then we were rich, and then we started cutting off all our sleeves, and this guy's incredible. I mean, it's official. There are now two Bill Belichicks in the National Football League. They say the apple does not fall far from the tree, right? Apparently, the drawstring does not fall far from the hooded, cut-off sweatshirt either. I mean, holy hell, that is really scary stuff. If I'm being honest, really scary stuff. You need some context. All right, do this then. If you don't believe me, try to pick out Steve from Bill in the next clip and Bill from Steve. You tell me. You try and decide which is which.
What difference does it make? Give me an F. Give me a C plus. I mean, I don't really, it doesn't matter. Give me whatever you want.
I've been watching it for a while. Like I said, football is my thing.
We're going to take it day to day. It's like we always do.
Yeah, those are between me and him.
Do you have any other questions? Really, you should take it up with our public relations department, which is very capably run by Stacy and his staff.
Yeah, I got a couple memories of
it. We're just trying to win the game, that's all.
Yeah, I was at the game.
I lived in Cleveland.
We're getting ready for Cincinnati.
I lived in Cleveland.
We're getting ready for Cincinnati.
I lived in Cleveland.
We're getting ready for Cincinnati.
Cleveland.
Seattle.
Cleveland.
Seattle.
Cleveland.
Seattle.
All right, so the only way you can distinguish between the two of these guys, right? The only way is one just sounds angrier. One is angrier. One is more confident in himself because he's been doing it for a long, long time. The other one's a little bit sheepish. But you give the kid a little more time, he's going to sound just like his old man. He already does. He already does. The reason Hood did not name his kid Hood Jr. is because he doesn't have to. Is anybody anywhere not going to know exactly who the hell that kid belongs to the second he opens up his mouth? Again, listen to the two of these guys. If not for the utter disdain that the old man has, you would not be able to tell these two apart.
We're just trying to win the game, that's all.
Yeah, I was at the game.
I lived in Cleveland.
We're getting ready for Cincinnati.
I lived in Cleveland.
We're getting ready for Cincinnati.
I lived in Cleveland.
We're getting ready for Cincinnati.
Cleveland.
Seattle.
Cleveland.
Seattle.
Cleveland.
Seattle.
Exactly the same. Exactly. Cleveland, Cincinnati. Cleveland, Cincinnati. Hug me, Amanda.
We're just trying to win the game.
How about your old pop? How about your old pop? You like that? You like that?
Yeah, I was at the game.
I lived in Cleveland.
Give me a little smooch. Give your brother a little smooch.
We're getting ready for Cincinnati.
Alan Lazard is my guest. Alan, it is so good to have you on. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Joe.
It's good to have you. All right, so you're coming off that first 100-yard receiving game of your career. You did so in the snow in New York. A lot of moments to hit on, but overall, how good did it feel to go on the road, get that win, and have the game that you had?
I just felt great, you know, just go out back out there and be able to get our offense back in the rhythm of things. Just be able to go out there and have the production that we did. I think it was kind of a great way to lead off to go into this week.
So, Alan, take me through the 37-yard TD late in the first quarter. What did you see on that play, and how did it feel to score and celebrate a little bit in New York?
Oh, it was awesome. You know, I motioned over there, and I saw the safety was playing so far off that I knew I was going to get a pretty good head start on him. As long as I stepped on his toes and was able to flip his hips, I was going to be wide open for Aaron to go make a play. And luckily, you know, he put a good ball out there, and I was able to make it.
Alan Lazard joining us. You know, I want to go back to you and your relationship with Aaron Rodgers in a moment, but what's it like to play for the Packers and go on the road and still hear a chant of go Pack go? Like, what's it mean to be a part of that Packer tradition and get the kind of support that you guys get pretty much everywhere you go?
Oh, it's such a huge honor to play for this organization. Not only to play with such great players, but just the richness of the tradition here and such a winning history. Such a huge honor. And be able to go out there and play with guys like Aaron, it's just a very humbling moment, and just I'm very privileged for it.
You know, it's one thing to play with him, but it's quite another, I think, to have the kind of support that you have from him. I mentioned your stats since that Week 6 win over Detroit, and the fact is you burst onto the scene right then, but Aaron Rodgers had been hyping you for a long time before that. So what's it mean to know that you've got a quarterback, and not just any quarterback, but that quarterback have your back and believe in you the way he does? What's that like?
Oh, I mean, it gives me the ultimate boost of confidence, knowing that, you know, a guy like him, with his caliber and his talents, that he's willing to step up, you know, and say the things that he has said about me and to put me out there and to be able to go out there and produce for him. It's just a huge honor and such a humbling moment for him to say those things and be able to go out there and play with him.
So when we talk about the things he says about you, it's pretty amazing because Aaron Rodgers is a really demanding guy, and I mean that in the best way possible. He's demanding of himself, and he's demanding of those around him. He's demanding of the coaches. And when he was talking about you, Alan, he said, quote, it starts with his habits. I mean, he has really good habits. I talk about it in the offseason a lot. The way that you approach your job is very important to your opportunities. I think it's a direct correlation between your preparation and the opportunities you get. And then he went on to say even more about you. So my question, you and I talked back when you were in college, but where do the habits and your work ethic come from?
100% back in college. You know, I think they definitely weren't as good as they are today when I was in college. But the coaches that I had, Coach Campbell and Coach Wade, the strength coach there, they definitely instilled like a dog mentality in me. And, you know, after going undrafted and whatnot and being in Jacksonville, I decided to realize that my opportunity to be successful in this league was starting to close. And so once I got to Green Bay, I knew I had to capitalize on this short opportunity that I had. And obviously, the rest is history.
Yeah, I love what you said about those guys helped instill a dog mentality in you. What do you mean by that?
Just going out there and just competing. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're tired. It doesn't matter if you're sore. No one cares. I mean, at the end of the day, we want to win, and so we have to do whatever it takes to win, and there's no excuses.
Alan Lazard joining us. Then there's that now famous moment in the Detroit game where Rodgers went to the receivers coach, and he asked, quote, if number 13 could come in for a little bit, end quote. You got in, you responded, you had four catches, 65 yards, and the touchdown in that win. Going into that game, though, you had never caught a pass from Aaron Rodgers in a regular season game. What was it like then to get that shot and make the most of it?
Oh, it was such an incredible moment just to be able to go out there and produce on Monday Night Football, especially. Just living out my childhood dreams was something that was very endearing to me and something I'll never forget.
All right, so going back to Iowa State for a minute, you committed to Iowa State even though bigger programs started to come in and recruit you. As you look back, what kind of memories do you have from your time at Iowa State?
Some of the best. You know, I met really great people there. Some of my best friends to this day are from Iowa State. And even though my record and my career wasn't how I thought it was going to be, I'm still very happy and satisfied with my decision of choosing to go there because I feel like if you look at the program now, you know, I think my goal going there was to leave an impact on the program and a change in the history there, and I think that's what I did.
No, that's absolutely what you did. In fact, when you and I talked a couple of years back when you were killing it there, Tom Manning, your offensive coordinator, was there when Matt Campbell arrived. He called you a culture changer and that your impact still lives on and carries on there. So what does that mean? You just touched on that. What's it mean to hear that? And how do you go about trying to be a culture changer? Was that the plan? Did you go there trying to change the culture?
You know, I went there just trying to win games. And whatever it took, you know, I was going to do it. So I think as far as working hard, developing that bond with my teammates, and just being able to rally everyone together to realize we all want to achieve the same goal and to be able to go out there and do that through the season. So, yeah, I think that I was able to do that at Iowa State.
Packers wide receiver Alan Lazard joining me for a few more moments. Then when it came to be evaluated for the draft, you played in the Senior Bowl, but you did so on a bad ankle. And it was a time when a lot of guys might have skipped that. Why was it important for you to keep battling on that ankle? And what did it feel like when you did that and still went undrafted?
You know, obviously going undrafted wasn't in the plan at all. But, you know, I just wanted to play on, you know, even though I didn't have the greatest ankle at the time, I still wanted to play just because I'm a competitor. And there was kind of a stigma around me that I was soft and I didn't try hard. So I think after a year and a half or so, I think I've kind of proven that wrong to people.
Man, it is so hard, right? Like labels, whether they're fair or not. Like how challenging is it when you get hit with a label, fair or not, to shake that label?
They were hard, you know, because to myself, I knew what my talent was. I knew what my roof and my potential was. But to everyone else, you know, this is how they viewed me. So I kind of took a humbling moment, stepped back, and realized how others perceived me, and I wanted to change that.
So you could have lashed out. You could have been angry. You could have been bitter. Others have been. But instead, you spend your first season with Jacksonville. You put your head down. You went to work. How much did you learn during your time in Jacksonville?
So much, so much. Coach McCardell, you know, I give him a lot of contribution to my game of where it is today, and as well as Coach Hackett, who is our offensive coordinator here now, but was with me in Jacksonville. He's really helped me to teach me to learn the NFL offensive game, how to set routes up, and just overall just how to be a good football player and a good teammate.
Yeah, and you mentioned Coach McCardell. Keenan McCardell used to come on the show quite a bit when he played. Did you know him as a player? Did you ever see, like, video of him playing? And what was he like to play for?
Yeah, I used to watch him all the time growing up and whatnot. So just be able to go out there and sit there and practice and just watch him coach and just listen to him and him pull up his old highlight tapes, of course, just to remind us of what he used to do. But I always appreciated my time with him for sure.
Yeah, like what would he say? When he would pull up his highlights and show you guys, how would he talk about the way he played the game and the things he did?
You gotta run. He used to always just be on my butt about not running hard enough or not dropping my weight fast enough. But, you know, him disciplining me like that. Every Wednesday after practice, we used to do some extra drill work in Jacksonville. So I contribute a lot of that, my success, definitely back to those days.
All right,
sure.
So you are modest, you are hardworking, you're humble. Is there any temptation for you right now to tell all those teams that passed on you, hey, what do you think? How do you like me now? Or is that not just the kind of fuel that you're running on?
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, it's in the back of my head of, you know, being doubted my entire life, really. So that's just what keeps me going and keeps me fighting. But at the end of the day, you know, I have one goal, and that's to get to the Super Bowl and win that. So once I get there, then I can tell the other teams that they missed out.
I see you working. Green Bay 9-3 on the year. They're first in the NFC North. They're at home on Sunday against Washington. He is playing big. He was undrafted, but a two-time all-conference player at Iowa State and the co-offensive player of the week for the Packers, Alan Lazard. Alan, great to have you back, man. Thank you so much. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you, John. I appreciate you.
Now, you know that your genes are not just about you, right? It's something that you share with the people closest to you. And uncovering potential health issues early on can help empower you with the information so you and your family can move forward to a healthier future. Which brings me to Ancestry Health. With Ancestry Health, you can discover how your DNA might influence certain health conditions and the steps that you can take with a healthcare provider to chart a healthier path forward. Ancestry Health looks at a carefully selected set and gives you insights about how they could impact you and your family. Ancestry Health gives you personalized health reports that are easy to understand with actionable insights and access to genetic counseling resources. And Ancestry Health gives you personalized health reports that are easy to understand with actionable insights and access to genetic counseling resources, plus a family health history tool to track generations of health. And of course, you'll receive Ancestry DNA ethnicity results to reveal your origins as well, which everybody loves. Learn from your genes. Take action for your family. Go to Ancestry.com/Rome and learn more. Get your Ancestry Health kit right now. Go to Ancestry.com/Rome. Ancestry Health includes laboratory tests developed and performed by an independent CLIA certified lab partner and with oversight from an independent clinician network of board-certified physicians, and genetic counselors. Ancestry Health is not currently available in New York, New Jersey, or Rhode Island. Alvin, are you ready? Let's get it. Looking back on the week that was.
Welcome back, man.
Come on, guys.
Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? A tremendous Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. Hope you had a great holiday weekend, and it is really nice to be with you. Another big week. We are into the month of December. Let's make sure we finish this year strong. Did a college team really lose a football game because a player scored a TD, pretended to be a dog, relieving himself, got flagged, and then they missed the extra point? My man, if you're going to go with a celebration like that, in that situation, man, you better get your money's worth. Dog urination and then dog dumping. And you rip one of those little green bags out of your sock like you're cleaning up after the pooch.
For the touchdown! Oh my goodness, DeAndre!
That blow-by handshake was bad. Just look the guy in the eye and say, nice job. You're not still waiting for a congratulations, are you? You know better than that. Think Bill Parcells ever congratulated me?
No disrespect.
I didn't think so. Get out of here, man.
He's upset that his idiot son is eating a cocktail of shrooms, Xanax, and a missing chromosome.
That was probably enough to do it, and even if it wasn't, he would have said something that was, so it was habit.
You know, I really feel that pretty unfair play.
It's unfair. It's not fair. That's not fair. That was not an Alabama team that deserved to be in the playoff. This guy's a sore winner and a sore loser.
I mean, I'll answer your questions, not your insults.
He is Jason Lockenfora, the Chargers. They find new and inventive ways to lose.
What are we doing right now? And do we just try to win a game with to Rod Taylor.
Bob Myers.
I got all testosterone at work, and then at home it's a bunch of estrogen, and it works out good.
I love the crisp on the pork.
And you might not have thought that you needed to see Guy Fieri and Andy Reid break bread in the back of a barbecue kitchen, but you do. Dude dominated.
Oh, yeah.
60 yards, Russell.
It just makes it so much fun to be part of this whole thing. And so it feels
like whoa, easy. Easy, BBP. When asked what he thought about Russ digging deep on what was not his best night, this is what Pete had to say. Easy. Jadeveon Clowney joins me for a few moments.
Oh, man, it's very hot, man. We just keep playing together and keep stacking wins together, and we're playing at a high level right now.
There's dumb, and then there's Josh Shaw dumb. He's in a league of his own. He is one of one. Take a bow, my man, because that is legendarily stupid. Danica.
We like to drink beer. We like to slam fireballs, and we like to bump ugly. That is Gardner Minshew for us, so that's what I'm with for the rest of the year. I'm out wrong.
Rackers.
I've got a golden ticket.
Troy Polamalu is my guest.
Hi, Jim. How are you doing? Great to hear from you, and I didn't know you were in Southern California as well. Very nice.
21 years old, so...
Man, it's all so good. My man was putting these gopher balls into two-way traffic 400 feet out. Smoke them if you got them, chef.
Put it in the bag.
Deontay Wilder is my guest.
I'm the hardest hitter puncher in boxing history. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a set of skills. My grandma said I was anointed by God years ago. And I'm only letting this little light of mine shine.
My beef is with local radio sports talk honks who conduct an interview and not tell me who they're talking to. It's radio, dude. I can't see it.
What's a sound drop from the Jim Rome Show that can be said during sex? Giddy up, horse face!
Giddy up, horse face!
How does that work? Dude, who are you sleeping with? Boom! Out of here.
Boom. Hey. Out of here.
That's pretty respectful. Well, you clones are smooth. Boom, out of here, and now I'm done.
Now I'm done.
Mike Norvell.
I'm doing well, Jim. Thanks so much for having me on, and it's always good on championship week to get a little jungle karma. Definitely excited about it.
Kill him right now!
I want to talk!
You kill him! You kill yourself, you mother... Give me back my son!
Glad you asked, John. Pretty intense. Hey, John. Like I said, this is not a kid show. Clones, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think to myself, give me back my show. Give me back my show, clones.
Every time I have sex, during it, all I ever hear is, why? Why? And when I'm done, they always say, hit the road, Dad.
Is there a more horrifying concept than clones having sex? Dana White.
Yeah, the same as it always is when I hear things from Colby Covington. You know, he says a lot of stupid stuff. He needs to worry about Kamaru Usman, who hates him, not whether I'm strapping the belt on him or not.
Peel the onion back a little bit.
If there's anybody who's ignorant, who's not paying attention, who's not doing the work, it's any of you Trojan fans who didn't see this coming.
Bring in some Trojan football.
Oh, that's a good idea. I mean... Bleep, Yogi Roth.
To me, if somebody says that, clearly you do not do any homework. If you have that take, your head's probably buried in a regional sandbox. But if you're given a national platform, it's an unfortunate abuse of that opportunity.
We are going to keep them touchdownless.
Alan Lazard is my guest. Alan, you mentioned Coach McCardell. How would he talk about the way he played the game and the things he
you
did?
You got to run. He used to always just be on my butt about not running hard enough.
Dan,
it's
got
actually
it.
Ben, but I won't hold that against you, brother.
Do not correct the host. Sorry about that, bro.
Yeah!
I know we're not winning a lot. Come to check out the new arena.
I'll give myself a 10.
Unbelievable!
Aunt Jane, can I get you these feet?
That's two for me.
It's two for me.
That's two for you. Brimsley, 2 minutes, brah.
Well done, young man.
You don't.
Used condoms. Bringing your own knife to a steakhouse.
I just had a malfunction.
I brought my towel.
Going into my dad's office.
Where's in the 360?
Good night now!
It's Friday night, I might go out to dinner. I wonder if I should bring my own steak knife. Time to Alvin. He is Dan Wojcicki. Dan, what's going on? How are you?
Hello, Jim. I am great.
Hello, Dan. I'm glad you're great. It's good to have you back. All right, let me start with the Clippers. They're 16-6. They start a really interesting road trip tonight in Milwaukee, which means we get Kawhi v. Giannis. For the first time since the conference finals last year, you've got a really good piece in the LA Times about this meeting. How much are you looking forward to it, and what kind of a battle are you expecting to see?
I mean, I think it's going to be a great game. You know, the Clippers haven't really found sort of who they are yet with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, and typically in this league, great teams bring the best out of people. And so I think the Bucks will bring the best out of the Clippers, and I think the Clippers will kind of look as good as they've looked since these guys have been on the court together for the last couple weeks. And then the Bucks are playing as good as anybody in the NBA right now. You know, 13 wins in a row, really have a strong identity. And, that you know, Kawhi and Giannis aren't going to go head-to-head for 48 minutes, right? Like, that's just not going to happen. You know, Kawhi probably won't even start out guarding Giannis. But there are going to be moments in that game where those two guys are kind of staring each other down. And when that happens, you've got one of the most unique offensive players in you know, basketball history, really, in Giannis Antetokounmpo, looking at a guy in Kawhi Leonard who's one of the most unique, you know, defenders. And those little moments are going to be really fun. And they'll be fun on the other side of the ball, too, where, you know, obviously Giannis is a really good defender and Kawhi can score too. So I'm really looking forward to it. You know, it's hard to get too excited about games, you know, before Christmas, but this should be a good one. I'm very lucky to be here to see it, because these are teams that could meet in the finals, Jim. It's very realistic.
We're talking to Dan Wojcicki. I love that matchup, and I'm curious to see how that goes. So, Dan, you touched on this, but 22 games into the season and a much shorter time into Kawhi and Paul George playing together, where are the Clippers when it comes to being the finished article? What does their best look like, and how close are they to that?
I mean, I think we don't know, you know, what they're going to look like yet. They still haven't played with Landry Shamet yet, which is a shooter that they need, a floor spacer that they need. I don't think they're done in terms of roster construction, whether that's trading for Andre Iguodala or if he gets bought out. I do think there are pieces that will be added to this team still, and I don't know where they are or who they are, but I haven't gotten the sense from anybody that they're done. And then I think, you know, when you look at it's hard for me to not compare them to the Lakers, because the Lakers, similarly, you know, two giant stars. Anthony Davis and LeBron James are just a much smoother, more seamless fit, right? You've got a guy with the ball, and you've got a big guy to pass the ball to. It's pretty simple. Kawhi and Paul George are a little more redundant, and I don't think it's a problem per se, but I do think it's taken a little more time, or it's definitely taken more time, to try to get those two guys optimized on the same page. I think there's a stat I saw that I think they, in the games they played together, they've only both shot better than 40% one time. So they haven't really played well at the same time together. Now, the good news is that the Clippers are talented enough, if one of them plays well, they're probably going to win. And I think that's part of the reason why you put them together. So, you know, they're winning while they're learning, and I know they're happy with where they're at. I just don't think they're close to being where they could be.
Dan Wojcicki's and national NBA writer for the LA Times. Dan, go back to what you said about LeBron and AD. Like, it seems pretty simple. It seems pretty seamless. But if I told you that a quarter of the way through the season, the Lakers would be tied for the best record in the NBA, and they would be playing some excellent defense on top of that, if I had said that to you before the season, what would you have said?
I think the defense part is probably what would have surprised me most, that Frank Vogel has been able to, like, implement his sort of ideas in his system and get those guys playing at a level and an intensity that, you know, quite frankly, LeBron didn't have last year. That's been a real sort of victory for them. I think, to me, Jim, when I watch the Lakers, the thing that I think about is, you know, that LeBron James had time off. You know, that he looks so energized. You know, he had an off season for really the first time, you know, in 15 years or 15 plus seasons, right, where he didn't play deep into June. There were no Team USA commitments, nothing like that. Like, this was get your body right, get your mind right, get ready for a season. And he's playing harder, particularly on defense, than he did a year ago. I think it's been a real success story, those two guys together. And then, you know, I think kudos to Rob Pelinka, kind of with his back against the wall after missing out on Kawhi Leonard in free agency. He kind of had to hurriedly assemble a team of role players, and they've done a good job of that, including Dwight Howard, who's been, you know, very, very good for them. You know, I don't think they're going to count on him making a lot of corner threes like he did at the end of that game in Utah. But after losing Dallas, to respond with, you know, really, really good victories in Denver and Utah, that's as tough of a back-to-back as you can play in the NBA. And you know, they're the best team in the league right now. And I don't know that they'll finish that way. I don't know that I think they have the best roster in the league, but I haven't seen a team that's playing better.
Dan Wojcicki is joining us. All right, Dan, before you go, the Rockets officially filed their protest yesterday over that Spurs game in which James Harden's dunk was not counted. What do you make of that situation, and is there any way that protest is going to be successful?
I mean, I think there's a chance, sure, but it's going to be hard to prove that, you know, a single missed call led to that result, right? I mean, this was a team that was still up, you know, pretty significantly late into that game and blew a lead. You know, I think to me, when I read the referee's sort of response to questions and the immediate aftermath of it, it's, you know, I think they were kind of like they equated it essentially to a blown goaltending call, right? And those happen, and it would be hard for me to see how the league would, you know, replay the final 8 minutes of a game or overturn a result. Like, it doesn't seem like that's an option there. I will say this: Houston does have a reputation of being sort of perpetually aggrieved. And it's part of it is the way James Harden plays, you know, how getting to the foul line is such a big part of what he does. So how he's officiated is always under scrutiny within that organization. And I think, you know, there's a little bit of irony that this happened to them. And it's, you know, it's a messy situation, obviously. You know, he scored the 2 points and they lost in double overtime. Like, they could have used that basket. But I really don't think that you can look at one call like that over the course of 48 minutes or 48 plus minutes in this instance and say, you know, this was the reason they lost. You know, you file the protest, you pay the fee to do so, and then you kind of see what happens. And my guess is that nothing does, but I would say there's a chance that there could be some action because the ball actually went through the hoop. But to me, to redo all of this stuff seems like it would be a big stretch for the league.
I think it'd be awesome, and it's not going to happen. But you imagine them running it back somewhere, Dan. Like, let's put 7:50 on the clock. I don't even care where they do it. They can do it there. They can do it at a local Y. Yeah, bottom line, so
they should do it. If they do it, they should do it somewhere fun.
Right. Yeah.
I agree.
So they're 14-7. They think they should be 15-6. Either way, what is your sense of the reunion between James Harden and Russell Westbrook?
I mean, I think that it's kind of gone the way that I thought it would. I think on a night-to-night basis, when I talk to execs and scouts about this, it's just on a nightly basis, they're just so hard to defend, right? You've got, you know, a generational player in James Harden, and you've got this guy in Russell Westbrook who, despite his efficiency woes, is, you know, it's like a brick is strapped to the gas pedal on a sports car, right? I mean, he's just all over the place playing so hard. He puts so much pressure on you. I think they're much easier to defend in the course of a playoff series than they are when you get them, you just see them once, you know, in the regular season. You don't really have a ton of time to prepare. I think they're moving in a really good direction. I anticipate that they'll be one of the three best teams in the West. They'll be a top three seed. I think that's sort of the expectation I get from other teams around the league, that they'll be there. But they're also, you know, clearly, I think from a championship level, they're a tier below where the Clippers and the Lakers are in the West.
It's going to be really interesting. He is a national NBA writer for the LA Times. He is a good friend of the program. He is Dan Wojcicki. Dan, great job. Always good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
All right, Jim, take care.
Silk or the fake silk?
Come on.
Or the fake silk? Let's go to Huntington Beach. What's up, brah?
What's up, brah?
That's the real thing. What's up, silk?
How was your Thanksgiving, brah?
Good, dude. How about you?
It was good, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you and the crew because, once again, I used the beautiful master-built smoker you guys gave me and did the 25-pound bird in there with a mix of cherry and apple wood, and I threw in a little baked mac and cheese in there, too. It was super
incredible.
Sweet,
right on. Good job.
All right, listen, bro. You know I love Yogi Roth. The guy surfs, but he's got to know better. He's judging this Helton decision in a vacuum. Is Helton a nice man? Is he a good guy? Sure he is. Everybody says that. Has he been dealt a bad hand with injuries and things? Sure. Are they showing improvement? Yes. But, Brad, you know this too. It's not just about that. It's about L.A. It's about filling a 90,000-seat building. It's about the pipeline from Modern Day and Bosco and places like that being turned to the SEC and no longer going to SC. It's about the boosters. It's about the license plate frames. Yogi's great, but he can't go to these boosters and season ticket holders and say, Clay Helton is locating his chakras and you guys should meditate and go surf in San Sebastian. That'll work on me, bro. I'm not an SC fan. I went to the Harvard or the West Coast, Cal State, Long Beach. But you can't look at it that way. It's Hollywood. It's not good enough to like take 4 years to get better and then start to compete. They'll give someone a couple down seasons, then they want national championships right after that. So seeing Ed Orgeron's success, the Peterson decision, and listen, their administration's been a mess. It's a private school. What are you going to do? But, brah, Yogi, I guarantee you, his platitudes and analysis, while it may be correct in a vacuum, is falling on deaf ears up in Trojan land, brah. Listen, have a good weekend. I'll be at Javier's this evening for a happy hour, brah. Talk to you later.
Nice job, Silk. Well done. Straight take Silk. Let's go to Little Rock, Arkansas. Dan. It's good to have you, Dan. How are you?
Yo, JP Rome, thanks for the vine. It's
you got
actually
it.
Ben, but I won't hold that against you, brother.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
That's my favorite. All right, so again. That literally is like our fault. And when I say our fault, I mean Hawk's fault, but I'm the leader of the group, so I will assume that. I got that guy's name wrong. That's one of my favorites. So, and again, couldn't have been nicer. I said Dan in Little Rock. Not only was he ready when I still went there, he very calmly said, yo, actually, it's Ben, but I'm not going to hold that against you. And then Alvin ran him. Alvin, why did you run a guy who corrected our mistake? Why? Alvin said, quote, dude, rule number one, do not correct the host. Dan, Ben, who cares? I don't know, Alvin, to be fair, and I appreciate that you got my back, Alvin. I really do. We did butcher the guy's name. The guy did correct our mistake. It's okay to correct. You know me, I'm all about accountability and responsibility. So it's okay to correct the host. Alvin's like, dude, don't correct the host. Yeah, but the host is wrong sometimes. Like, I was wrong about that. I was wrong because Hawk gave me the wrong name, but I am the leader of the group. It came out of my mouth. My name is on the marquee. I make the most money. I will own it. You can't run a guy. All right, so this is what happened. Dan. It's good to have you, Dan. How are you?
Yo, JP Rome, thanks for the vine.
It's you got
actually it. Ben, but I won't hold that against you, brother.
That's not a good call. No. I don't like that call.
Hey, let me ask you something, Dan. You weren't going to hold it against me that we got your name wrong, and I appreciate it. Are you going to hold it against me that we got your name wrong, you corrected it, and then we ran you. Are you going to hold that against me? I know you're not going to hold the first thing against me, but, and you're a good guy for that. You're the best guy ever if you don't hold that against me, though. The fact that we ran you when you were right and we were wrong. Arkansas, Dan.
It's not smooth, this guy.
It's good to have you, Dan. How are you?
What's up, JP Rome?
Yo, JP Rome, thanks for the vine. Ben, but I won't hold that against you, brother.
I'm glad you won't, Ben, because you just got run, Ben. Hey, Ben, brother, I'm sorry. Consider this an official apology from me. We should not have done you like that. Alvin, I know you get defensive and you got my back and it gets all personal and stuff. You know, funny thing about Alvin, Alvin likes everybody. Alvin will never get aggro with anybody. But for some reason, every once in a while, if you come in here and you correct me like that, Alvin takes that personally and he will hammer you. Just like he did Dan or Ben or whoever the hell you are. Just kidding. Ben. JP Rome. It's actually Ben. But I'm not going to hold that against you. Well, I'm glad. Thanks for not holding that against me, Dan. Hey, Dan, I appreciate you. Now meet my good friend, LT.
But I won't hold that against you, brother.
That's not a good call. No. Yo, brother. You ever heard of LaDainian Tomlinson? Well, you have now. Sorry about that, bro. Sincerely, sorry about that. That's on us. Not you. You got your telephone number. You know where to find me on Twitter. Any Bills Mafia want to get up in here? Actually, he was a member of the Mafia. He just didn't get a chance to show it because he got run. Pretty rich of us to get a guy's name wrong and then run him for correcting us. That's a great moment for us, Alvin. Pretty rich of us to hammer a guy for mispronouncing his name, having him correct us. And we're like, oh, yeah, really? How's this feel? How about this, Ben or Dan or John or whoever you were? If we have you in the year in review, he's Rick in Buffalo. Rick, what's going on? How are you?
Romy, my homie. Thanks for getting me in, brother. This city's all kinds of fired up for this weekend showdown with the Ravens. It's the biggest regular season game in these parts in a couple decades. And they're only getting bigger. But before looking ahead, Jim, I gotta quickly look back at Thanksgiving Day in Dallas when Josh Allen pulled the ball out of that fourth down scrum, then muscled his way for the game-changing first down. He introduced himself to the entire football world as the next big thing. It reminded Bills fans of Jim Kelly's last-second dive between Dolphin defenders for the game-winning score in the 89 season opener, the moment the Super Bowl era officially began. And 30 years from now, we'll be looking back on Allen's play in the exact same light. This team's on the doorstep of something big, Jim. And it'll be on full-on display when they beat down Baltimore on Sunday. Now, I'm not sure if it's a Where's the Beef Friday, but I don't really care, because you're getting mine anyways. Nothing pisses me off more than these pretentious a-hole parents who throw those lame gender reveal parties for their ugly unborn kids. Are they dense enough to think anyone actually gives a damn? Yeah, I'm looking right at you, Wells in the 360. Old Wellsy's been taking his Twitter victory lap all week for that stupid name drop idea. But what everyone really needs to focus on is that pathetic sonogram video he posted last week, followed up by the cringeworthy gender announcement he made on the Woodscopes. And just like Dad, it's a girl. You can toughen up anytime now, big guy. War of the Bills running the table right through Super Bowl 54. War all the Springsteen talk on F107 of the podcast. War Trapper and Dana Point. Traps like us, babe. Thanks for the vine, Jim. I'm out. Good night now.